Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Prep Life Podcast. This is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini, Amy Inger, today with my fabulous co-host.
Hey, guys. This is Chris Nicole, Glam Girl Bikini Coach and IFBB Bikini Pro.
So today we're going to be talking about recomping, and we're going to talk about what it takes to swap out that body fat for the muscle and how to, be in a deficit, still have muscle tissue growth without putting on too much body fat. But before we get into that, do you want to share anything exciting that's happened over your last 7 days, Chris?
Oh my goodness. We are packing to move, so we will be relocating to North Carolina for a couple months, which I'm actually really excited about because it will put us in a situation where we can have a little bit more of a steady routine. So for those of you that are frustrated with a lot of travel and a lot of moving parts within your life, you probably can relate to wanting to have a consistent schedule and some good stability. So I think it'll put us in a good position as far as being able to maintain our food prep and our gym time and just get on a regular schedule. Sleep too. So I'm excited about that. It's been a lot, but it'll be a good transition. How about you?
Yeah, I just recently went to Key West to celebrate my husband's 40th and had an eye-opening realization. So I have a scale that I have here at home that's bigger. And then I have a travel scale that kind of folds up and is very compact. Well, I packed all my food like a prep lifer should, and we had a kitchen and all that. And so some of the stuff we had to, make fresh there. And I had to shuffle some things around because after my check-in, my macros changed. And so I'm using this scale and I'm realizing that everything that I pre-packed was measuring way more than what I originally had measured. And I'm putting sweet potatoes on the scale and I'm thinking, okay, I entered this in my fitness pal, I weighed this at home and now it's saying it's way more sweet potatoes than what I measured. And then same with oatmeal, I thought I had packed 40 grams and then it was saying 50. So unbeknownst to my knowledge until this weekend, I've been overeating by so much. And I think my coach is thinking I was cheating on my diet and doing all the wrong things. And then I realized that my scale has been mismeasuring my food and I literally cross-referenced everything. And so it was just off by a little bit, but those little bits at every meal count so much. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure it was putting me in a surplus. And so looking forward to moving on from this experience and seeing a little bit of a recomping myself here in this improvement season, because I was getting a little scratching my head, why am I keep gaining weight? And so there's my answer.
There you go.
Yep. So anyways, as we segue here into our recomping talk, I want to just kind of address some of the old school mentality. And I think most good coaches don't do this anymore. This was definitely a bro thing. And it's that whole bulking old school mm-hmm. concept that you have to put on all this fat and eat all these calories to be able to build muscle. And then, doing a super hard crash diet where essentially you're kind of losing a lot of the muscle you had gained in that amount of time trying to get off the body fat that you had put mm-hmm. on. So I always feel whenever I do consults and someone's entering an improvement season or something like that, when we're talking about it, I kind of coin my term as a lean gain phase in an improvement season. And basically, I feel this is the most successful approach because you're either trading out, muscle for fat, but you're kind of shooting more towards a maintenance calorie and trying to figure out what that is with the athlete, and then based on where they're at, what their goals are, if they need to build more muscle, if they kind of need to just overall have a little bit lower composition in terms of fat. So basically, a more modified version of that whole, bulking and things like that, like where you can still stay like semi lean and still gain muscle. I don't know if I explained that well, but do you want to kind of add to that definition?
Yeah, I definitely think there's a lot of fear behind people getting off stage. Like, I feel like I've had a lot of conversations with athletes that are like, I don't want to put on a ton of weight. I've worked so hard. And there's like that happy medium between, you know, being healthy in your improvement season, but also not having to like overshoot body fat and overdo the calories, like be smart about it. And if you're getting on stage each year and you're seeing improvements within your shape, then, you know, you're doing it in a smart way. So I think a lot of these points for this podcast are going to be really helpful for people. And like you said, there's a strategic way to do it. And it may not be what you think needs to happen as far as like your weight gain and your calories. So, yeah, I'm excited to talk about this topic.
Yeah. And just to reiterate, there is some science behind this method to the madness of not bulking. So regardless of what people tell you, you know, if you look at the study that was done in 2013 by Garth and colleagues, the one group had a 600 calorie surplus, and it actually led to no extra muscle, which was crazy, but three times the body fat that the other group had. So there's definitely something to this, that we don't need to put on a bunch of fat just to gain muscle. So let's go over some of the groups that are going to actually benefit the most from a recomping situation, and they're going to respond the quickest. This doesn't mean that if you don't fall into this group, which I think the majority of the population probably will in some form or another,
yes.
But, and we'll kind of go into that, but these are like the most obvious groups. So if you want to start with number one.
Sure. Easy recomp happens for newbies, or, you know, people that are first time training. They're primed for muscle growth, because they've never had that stimulus. So they can also utilize a lot of stored body fat, and utilize for, putting on like, and sorry, stored body fat for producing energy as far as like doing your recomping and utilizing a progressive overload. So, yeah, first timers get like a super easy bonus where they get to train in the gym and see quicker progress. Just being fresh, going in fresh.
Yeah, I think they say the average newbie gains 12 pounds of muscle in a year, and then every year after that it kind of tapers off. Like the second year it's 8 pounds, and then kind of on average it's like 3 to 4 pounds of muscle max once you become experienced. Okay, so then obese are definitely a population too that can really quickly respond to the recomp, due to the fact that they have high reserves of fat that lead to building muscle even when they're in a caloric deficit. So they can still build muscle in a deficit because they're pulling energy from those fat stores.
Yes. Detrained individuals are another population that can easily recomp. So someone who is injured, they've had to step away from the gym or from training, and they come back. You can, a lot of times they see a quick regrowth due to muscle memory and those satellite cells. So they can see like a big rebound as far as like recomping, going back into their training.
Yep. And then another subset would be anyone taking PEDs. Just allows that individual to tap into body fat stores to build muscle very quickly. And then the last but not least group.
Sure. So the sub-optimized trainee, where they've been going to the gym for a while, but they're not maximizing their growth. So that's like someone who's not training with proper technique or proper intensity. And they now are utilizing proper technique and intensity, and being very strategic in their training style can see a lot of that recomping happening.
Yeah. And I mean, I'd say this was the first like 5 years of my bodybuilding career when I did the muscle confusion technique. I feel like as soon as I started switching over to a progressive overload program, that's where you can really see the most changes. And once you kind of get you're not just going through the motions, you're actually paying attention to those finite details, such as like heart rate, intensity, how many, how much volume you're doing, and, you know, how many reps are you adding, or how much weight are you moving through your, you know, mesocycle and things like that. So, mm-hmm. All right. So the way to do it, there's kind of five basic fundamentals that you would need to recomp. So when we're talking about a, you know, gaining muscle and like either losing fat, if that's the goal, everything starts, the foundation starts with a training program. Because if you think about a car, you can have the most efficient fuel possible that you're pouring gasoline into the car, but if there's no engine, you're not going to see any muscle growth. So you can eat a proper diet and be fueled properly, but if you're not weight training, you're not getting that stimulus to allow muscle protein synthesis to actually work. So if you can think of that kind of analogy of the car, also think of like your sleep as your oil change and like your tire rotation as your stress management. As you do those things, you're just really fine tuning your muscle building process. So that's number one. And then Chris, do you want to take number two?
Sure. So primary goal to establish or build muscle is kind of looking at if your body fat as a female is between 18 and 22%, then your primary goal typically will be to build. So looking at what your goal is when you're going into the gym or what your programming is focused towards, if you're sitting at a body fat between 25 and 30%, you know, typically your primary goal will be to lose some fat. Again, with both body fat percentages, you can still do that recomping. It's just kind of knowing how to aim at your target based off of utilizing your body fat composition.
Yep. So once you have, you know, implemented your training technique, you've established what your primary goal should be, the next step is setting up your calories appropriately. So let's say that you are, you know, your goal is to, let's say you'll need to be in a surplus if you're running on that lean side. So essentially, if a female is below 22% body fat, it'll be kind of a sliding scale as to if your goal is to build at that point, then you're going to need to have like a 5 to 20% surplus on top of your maintenance calories. So mm-hmm. you first have to establish what your maintenance calories are. And then if you have established that you are lean and your fat composition is at a good spot, a healthy spot to kind of build muscle, then depending on how lean you actually are. So like if you're closer to the 22% body fat, then, you know, maybe just like a 5% surplus, mm-hmm. Or slash maintenance. If you're around 23 to 24%, you'd be more about around the maintenance calories. And then if you're, you know, below 18%, like 15% or something like that, then you're going to be closer to that 20% surplus. And then on the flip side of it, if, you know, your body fat's higher than 25%, you're obviously, your primary goal that you establish is that you need to lose fat. So you're going to be in a deficit on a sliding scale. Again, you know, if you're at the 25%, you're probably going to be at a deficit of like 10 in order to build muscle. And then if you're like over 30%, you know, you're probably going to need to be about 20% off your maintenance intake. So I think from there, before we go on, I think we should kind of talk about, deep dive into body fat percentages and yes. how we figure this out as a coach, because this is really hard to navigate because not every online individual even knows what their body fat percentage is. Everybody kind of uses different techniques. We do have a podcast on body fat percentage, but I just want to briefly kind of give you all some anecdotal ideas. Obviously you should be guided by a coach with this. That's the most ideal way to do this, but just to kind of educate you on how we look at this as coaches, and how we implement this, because that can be really tricky. You can't just know what someone's body fat percentage is when, you know, you're an online coach and the only thing you take a look at is their weight, their measurements, and their pictures. Mm-hmm. Now you can see a lot like in a picture, I think, and you can see, if someone's weight's kind of staying the same, but their inches are going down, obviously, you know, they're losing fat, they're recomping, they're gaining muscle because they're swapping it out. Fat is like a very voluminous tissue. So a pound of fat is so much bigger than a pound of muscle. Muscle is very dense. So yes. Your clothes fit you better. Your inches are lower. You look tighter. But, I mean, we're pretty data-driven people. So do you want to start with just giving some examples of, like, how you navigate the whole body fat percentage thing, and if you have your clients kind of use some tools or some tools that you like to utilize, if possible?
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree. I think it's very difficult to know, like, I have people ask me, like, how do I know if I'm putting on muscle or I'm putting on body fat, whether the scale is staying the same or increase, like, especially if it's increasing, people get really upset. So I like to utilize a DEXA scan. That's my personal favorite. If people can afford to go to, like, I think you could go on, I like Google DEXA.com, and they have like a website where you can click and find locations near you that have a DEXA scan. And then I just like called around to see if they were locations that would take outside patients or clients and not like a medical facility. So I actually found a really good one that's about 45 minutes away, but they do like a whole analysis with you. And I like those because it gives you a report. And then also it allows you to see like your comparison from your last DEXA scan, and you can see continued progression. They do everything from you. I mean, the machine was made to measure bone density, but it also shows you not only your body fat percentage, but body fat distribution, your muscle tissue. It's just like very good data when it comes to knowing what's going on with the physique in different stages. So that would be my number one pick. What are you utilizing, Amy?
Yeah, I love DEXA, and we have a DEXA Fit KC here in Kansas City. It's like literally 10 minutes from my house. But DEXA Fit is a franchise that's in almost every major city. So that one's really good. I know that it's not cost effective, though. It's extremely expensive. Yes. So yeah. I only do that one every 6 months or so, you know, and it is a radiation exposure because it mm-hmm. is an X-ray. It is the most accurate, in my opinion. However, I typically do it like at the beginning of like when I'm about to start a prep, and then like at the end just to kind of see how that mm-hmm. prep compares and how much muscle I maybe lost during that time, and then kind of how much body fat I put on during an improvement season. Those people that are hard gainers that, or people that are taking like a long improvement season and their weight's kind of just staying the same because we figured out what their maintenance calories are, this is a prime group to utilize a DEXA scan, because the scale is not giving you a ton of feedback. And a lot of times I'll see that the inches won't change that much if we're kind of having that person at maintenance. Mm-hmm. So what we'll find in a DEXA is that they have built a lot of muscle, but they just were, you know, switching it out. So their percent of fat is down, but it was like a sneaky recomp because, you know, if we just looked at some of the other more basic data, we wouldn't have been able to pinpoint that. And then I have some clients that are just hard gainers. They just, their weight never changes. Like as long as I've known them, it never changes. So, a secondary measurement tool that would be second in my list of measurements is the one that we have here at the Glam Girl headquarters, and that's a Fit 3D scanner. The reason why I like that one is it gives you a posture report, and it shows the symmetry of the athlete. It shows the body balances. It shows inches all over. It is a bioelectrical impedance when it comes to composition. So that's not as accurate if the person's not hydrated, you know, so they've had caffeine, they've worked out, they've sweated, because lean tissue has a lot of water in it. But they do cross-reference DEXA scans with the Fit 3D scanner. That's why I liked it. They take, you know, thousands of, like, people that are the same gender, like, age, weight, all of that. They take the DEXA scans and they kind of cross-reference it. So it's fairly accurate in that sense, but there is a disclaimer on that one that the body fat percentage usually shows a little bit higher for lean individuals, especially bodybuilders. So my primary reason for measuring with that one is not so much to see how much muscle someone's gained particularly, but more so like their inches, their balance, their symmetry, and all of that. So again, it's kind of an apples to apple thing where as long as that's your tool that you're always using, then you can really track as long as you keep your hydration level consistent. That is a good one to look at for the body fat percent as long as you're comparing apples to apples. So, and I have had people tell me that have come over here, like I've had a couple athletes where they'll take a scan here at Glam Girl headquarters and then they'll drive over to Fit KC and do their DEXA and the percent of fat is exactly the same. So, but that's just like a couple people that I've, so I don't want to like say that that's a hard and fast, but, and then third, I kind of want to talk about was InBody because that's what that one, is very affordable. Usually the Fit 3D scan is pretty affordable too. So those are ones that you can probably afford to do monthly. I know some people do bod pods if they are on a military base, but, and that one's air. It's like a, it measures the density not quite as accurately, I've noticed. So InBody would probably be my third favorite, but you just have to know that every time I've done an InBody, I've done a DEXA the same day and it's always 5 to 7% less on my body fat. Mm-hmm. So again, you just have to look at it. Like, I mean, it'll probably say that a person's 12% body fat, whereas really they're like probably like closer to 17 to 20% body fat on a DEXA. So kind of taking that with a grain of salt. I feel like I've gone on a tangent. Is there anything you wanted to add to the body fat talk?
No, I agree with all of that. I've done the InBodies too. And I've been like, wow, I'm like so lean. Yes. And so, like you said, it's using like apples to apples. I've tried everything. I've even tried doing the calipers. Like if you like tedious work and risking human error, like go for the calipers. But DEXA has been like super easy. And I've done the 3D fit scan as well too. So I think that's one thing as an athlete, I feel like has been part of my responsibility in my prep is making sure that I'm giving my coach as much data as possible. So, you know, finances and my schedule allowing, I think like measuring that body fat to give outside information outside of like the pictures and measurements and the scale just kind of like helps you along. So,
yeah, and
it's a good tool.
Originally, so before I got this machine, I made this big investment. I used to manually, like people would come over and I would tape measure all of their body parts like the scanner does. And so the reason why I got the machine is just because over time, like tape measures will stretch out and I wanted it to be very consistent and accurate. However, I really do feel like even though you have to, again, kind of just think of it as apples to apples, similar to the InBody, the calipers, if the same person's doing it and they're really good and experienced, which I have done hundreds over my lifetime because that's what I always used to do was the calipers. I do a 7-site and I was very accurate and I would use like the same consistent body markers so that I was measuring in the same spot. If you have somebody doing it every week, like I was, like, you know, the same person doing it on the same body, I do think it is pretty accurate. However, again, like that one's a sliding scale, like InBody, where you kind of have to add like 5 to 7% on top of what it is. Cause it'll just say you're really lean. Like again, it'll say 12%. You have to just kind of add on like 7% body fat and just take it for what it is kind of thing.
So I've totally tried to do calipers on myself. I don't know if you've ever tried to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to have my husband do mine. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, don't do it on yourself.
No.
I would get like so frustrated.
Okay, so before we run out of time, let's get to number four. So after you've, you know, we've gone on this tangent of the calories. So once you kind of realize where you're at, how much of a surplus or deficit you need to be at, you're going to need to set up your macros. And the primary one when it comes to muscle building that we need to take a look at is protein, because protein synthesis, hello, that mm-hmm. stimulates, along with the weight training, growth. So this is another thing that you can look at as a sliding scale. If you're a leaner person, then you're going to need to be on the higher end of protein. So if you're one of those people that's under 18% body fat, you're probably going to need to do 1.6 grams per pound. And then if you are a, you know, person that's closer to 25 to 30% body fat, you're going to be closer to like a 1.2 grams per pound. I know a lot of people say like baseline just to like maintain muscle and things like that is 1 gram per pound of body weight. But like if you're trying to improve and actually put on muscle, then you need to increase that slightly. And just keep mm-hmm. in mind too, like if you've listened to previous podcasts about muscle protein synthesis and protein intake, that if you're an aging population, you actually need more due to sarcopenia. Mm-hmm. So all things to keep in mind. But baseline, you need to at least be matching your body weight with your grams of protein for sure. Anything yes. to add on that before we go to number five?
No, I think you pretty much hit it.
Okay.
Okay, so we also want to pay attention to the details. Number one thing also to kind of keep into account is your sleep. So if you're trying to build muscle tissue, getting quality and enough sleep is going to be super helpful for you. Amy, do you want to talk about this paper? You're always good about talking about the data.
Sure. Yeah, so a paper that was done in 2018 by Wang and colleagues, they had two groups of participants, both with the same deficit. One group got more sleep, and both had the exact same weight loss. However, the group that had more sleep lost 83% was of their loss was from fat. And the group that had much less sleep, 85% of their weight loss was muscle, which is like mind blowing. Like, yes. Oh, mic drop.
Yeah. Yeah. And this was in an untrained group.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that
would have changed it a little bit for the,
yeah.
It would have retained a little bit more muscle. So, but yeah, good I to bring up.
The only difference was an hour. Like, there was an hour mm-hmm. between the, and it wasn't like a crazy, like, it wasn't like they were getting, you know, like an example of 7 versus 8 hours of sleep, the difference in what your body is, how your body is recomping. So yeah, don't neglect the sleep. Everybody thinks about like the calories and the gym, but the recovery aspect is where your body rebuilds. So definitely prioritize your sleep.
Yeah. And that was actually during the week that they had one less hour. And then they even allowed them to try to catch up on the weekends, which I always had lot of clients say like, oh, you know, I only got 6 hours. I didn't hit my like 7 to 10 this week, but I'm going to go ahead and sleep in like on my days off or on the weekend to try to catch up. But like that mm-hmm. obviously it doesn't work like that. It's the daily thing and the daily habits that matter.
Good point.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So peri-workout nutrition, I'm a big nerd about this. I don't know if you've ever heard me talk about this. I know I talked about it on like, Naima's podcast on Bikini Diaries, but it's just super important to be an elite eater when it comes to building muscle. So I think a lot of athletes miss the boat, especially when they're macro tracking. So I know a lot of coaches out there just give people macros. We do a hybrid because we feel like peri-workout nutrition is so important for muscle growth and recovery. And so the amount of protein bolus that you have pre-workout mm-hmm. versus, you know, lifting on an empty stomach, or just counting like total macros and not having, you know, carbs before your workout for energy. Mm-hmm. It really does matter, and it stimulates muscle protein synthesis, and it spikes so much more just by, you know, giving yourself a 20 gram dose of protein before workout. And then also post-workout for the recovery standpoint and to prevent muscle degradation, we want to make sure that we're having carbs so it slows down the breakdown of tissue and that we speed up by having, you know, especially high content of leucine primarily, but also all 9 essential amino acids while we're working out and recovering. Super important to have that post-workout so it shuttles to the muscles for growth and repair. I'll get off my soapbox about peri-workout nutrition. But do you want to take the last one? We kind of just talked about like the top tier supplements that really have the biggest impact. There's mm-hmm. obviously different supplements that can matter, but
there's no magic like recomp supplements, but some things that can be beneficial for specific points in your prep are three things we kind of pulled out. Number one is caffeine. So utilizing that to kind of help fuel your workout, to give you a lot of energy, get a good training session. The caveat to that is you can become tolerant to caffeine. So making sure you're taking regular detoxes and not overdoing it is, we want to be instrumental in how we're utilizing our supplements and protecting our organs, especially the adrenal glands when it comes to caffeine. Protein powder is really good. If you know, we talked about how much protein you need to get. That's a good way to supplement, making sure that you're getting all the essential amino acids, specifically very important for vegans who may struggle to get all 9 essential amino acids. And then creatine is also another thing that's been a studied supplement. We do have a podcast on creatine monohydrate as well, but a good thing to help with recovery and fueling your workouts and facilitating that muscle growth.
Yep. And just to add on the caffeine, it also does help with fat oxidation, along with, like Chris was saying, your focus and performance in the gym, but it also helps with the fat burning process as well. And then with the creatine, like we mentioned in the previous podcast, about 5 grams is a really good dose daily for most individuals. But yep. You could do a little bit less than that too as well, especially if you're eating red meat. So if you're a vegan, again, get your creatine, get your rice and pea protein powder. Both of those mm-hmm. we can put in the description link. The Vegan Pro from First Form is excellent. It's a good blend of pea and rice protein powder mm-hmm. With stevia. And then also the creatine monohydrate comes in a powdered form with no flavor. So that's a good one too. It's the micronized creatine monohydrate. So,
yes.
All right. With that, we are past our 30 minutes here. So we really wanted to do a Q&A. We need just a few more questions. So I know a lot of you were really good about after the last podcast, I got a couple more DMs. But we just wanted a few more. So if you can find us on Instagram, we are at Prep Life Podcast or at Glam Girl Bikini. We would love for you to shoot us a DM, give us a suggestion so that we're kind of going over topics that you're interested in. And we are an unfunded podcast. However, we have gotten many weird requests for running ads, such as Manscaped and various other things that we just don't want to sell out to all of you for, because the reason why we're on this podcast, we're doing this for you. The one way to pay for it is to send it to a friend, share it on your stories on Instagram, leave a rating or review. We'll keep giving them to you ad free if you can just do that exchange, because we want to help other people and that's the best way to do it. So if you would like to apply for the team, you can go to glamgirlbikini.com, hit the get started button and fill out the application. From there, we will be glad to set up a phone consultation to see if it's the right fit. So with that, this is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini, Amy Enger, signing off with my fabulous co-host.
And this is Chris Nicole, Glam Girl Bikini Coach and IFBB Bikini Pro. Thanks for listening, guys.